Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Well, not quite, Alan Nathan. Karen Kettling filling in for Alan Nathan, as I do on a regular and not a very, not very predictable basis, but I love doing it. And by the way, if you'd like to access the archives of the Alan Nathan Show, all you got to do is just go to www.mainstreetradionetwork.com and you'll find a veritable treasure trove of shows on the Alan Nathan Show. Well, have you felt like everything is upside down? Yes, indeed. Good is bad, up is down, right is left. Black activists, it looks like, this is a news item, demanded that a Good Samaritan be charged for shooting an armed robber at a Houston taco joint. Zoe Warren joins us to talk about it. He's a filmmaker, freelance video producer, documentarian, and journalist, editor at large for The Standard SC, owner of Pistuo Productions, and hosts the New American Magazine program, 2A for Today. Zoe Warren, thank you so much for joining us here on The Alan Nathan Show.
Hey, Karen, thank you. I'm honored. Thank you.
Yeah, so good to have you. So you just can't make this stuff up. Black activists want somebody who is trying to defend himself to be charged for what? Does that mean all people should just lay down and accept crime being imposed upon them, perpetrated upon them? Apparently, that's what they think. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, as long as they're in a certain demographic, then, you know, you should not be able to defend yourself. And if you do, you have to do it within certain parameters. Otherwise, you didn't do it properly, and you should be indicted.
Yeah, yeah. KOU says, Houston activists say, vigilante killer who shot robbery suspect should be charged. For what in particular, and especially in Texas? Tell us more about the case, if you would.
Yeah, well, there was a gentleman at a Mexican restaurant there who was witness to his neighbors being violated by a violent criminal who appeared to have a deadly weapon in his possession. After the gentleman who was, you know, robbing people in his presence, you know, was in a compromising situation where I think he had his back to him, our hero stood up, fired off 8 rounds pretty quickly, and then he, I guess, was concerned that the guy may have something else on him, and he went back and fired one more round, and it was within like a 4-second block that he turned around and then thought differently and went back. And I think what they're really trying to pinpoint is that moment he turned around and went back, that was malice. Or they're trying to establish the case that you should have just let him wriggle there and bleed out and maybe pull a gun out of his pants and shoot some people rather than because you're terrified in a situation you don't know what's going to happen next, making sure that you neutralize the person and that you're secure. So.
Well, as a person just sort of hearing the story, I apologize, I wasn't familiar with. So he fired a total of 9 shots? Is that correct?
That is correct. According to the report that I read, that is correct.
Wow. So, you know, it is true. People are being enculturated to believe that if you fire at all and people don't want you to fire at all, then they're going to scrutinize whether you fired at the right time in the right way, and yet those principles are never imposed on the criminal. What do you make of what they're saying? Are they saying that he shouldn't have fired 8 shots? Did all of them hit their mark, or what?
No, I don't think they have the foolish notion that he was not in the right defending himself and his neighbors. They just want to try to make the case that, you know, firing that extra round was just malice. And to me, they're trying to go to the heart of causing people to be insecure defending themselves, period. It doesn't really necessarily matter that there was another round that was shot. They just want people to feel that they're white.
Afraid of fighting back. Is that right?
Especially if you're white. Like, there is this whole movement around the country against white hate group, anti-government, terrorist, extremist. And this language is trying to cause certain groups to even make themselves vulnerable. And I think this is party to that, you know, and that's why that DA who's Soros backed, who, like, the prosecutors, I don't think even want to actually charge the guy. I think it's the actual DA that is trying to send it to the grand jury. And that DA is apparently reportedly Soros backed, kind of wokest. And I think this goes to the heart of the ideology that they don't really believe in self-government. They believe in big government. They don't believe in limited government. They want government to have more power. Usually they're just waiting for the police to show up. You know, that's their idea because they don't understand the principles of self-government.
No, they certainly don't. What about, did this perpetrator die? Was he shot dead?
I'm fairly certain.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, with 9 shots, he probably was, I guess.
Yeah.
But
let's
speak to the whole idea of, instead of elevating principles like not committing crimes and not imposing your will on innocent people and then being punished for it, we are focused phenomenally on the color of someone's skin, what group they belong to. And it's as if they've brainwashed the public to think differently about pretty basic things, crime and punishment. Could you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, it's because there is, you know, a prevailing notion among university types, right, that they need to fix the cattle. They are the rancher, we're the cattle. They need to make sure that the cattle operate in a certain way. They're in charge. We need them. We couldn't do it without them. They're luminous. You know, they're the patricians. We're the plebeians. You know? if we just do what they told us, everything will go well for us because they're selfless and they're doing it for the greater good. And so they don't calculate the oppression that comes as a consequence of their greater good concepts, right? And one of the things they're trying to do is equalize society. They believe that the Second Amendment is born of white supremacy, that our American form of republic is white supremacy, that the basic tenets of self-government, even, all those things are white supremacy. Communism, now, that is holy and just and good. And even though it kills hundreds of millions of people, they just didn't do communism right. We can do it right this time.
Yeah.
And this prevailing notion is driving this conversation.
You know what, Zoe? And we're talking to Zoe Warren, filmmaker, and I can't wait to hear you making a film about this. I'm not sure that they believe it is white supremacy. I wonder how many people really buy it and are not aware that this is a tactic in order to make criminals into victims and law-abiding citizens into criminals. I'm not sure that people, you know, except for a small number of people who believe that mathematics is racist and Dr. Seuss is racist and everything is racist if it's free market and capitalist, and everything is good if it's Marxist, socialist, and communist. It seems like all of it goes towards this communist agenda. The rest is just window dressing. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I would honestly argue, though, that the people that have the pulpit, like the Guardian media, the legislators, the university people, they're the ones driving the conversation. And for most people, perception is reality, and they just get their information from the news. And so if they can repeat a lie often enough, with enough force, with enough resolve, then the people start to believe it. You know, like we have the AG in Washington State, putting a report forward that says white supremacy and domestic violent extremism of white supremacists is the greatest danger in Washington State. You find state legislators passing that same kind of stuff. And so I would say that there is a narrative being driven that would enhance and grow the security state. And I think what they're really, really trying to do is put together a big government law enforcement arm that can prevent even people like people protesting school boards.
Yeah. Calling them terrorists. That's outrageous. So can people, we got to run. Can people go to 2A for today?
A two for today. If you type in two for today and Zoe, it'll bring up my show.
Zoe Warren. Very good. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll be back with another great guest on the Main Street Radio Network and the Alan Nathan Show. Stay tuned.
There are a number of differences between food allergies and food sensitivities. Primarily, food allergies will typically give symptoms fairly quickly after the food item is eaten, sometimes within seconds and certainly within minutes. Where with food sensitivities, the symptoms can often come on, you know, days and even weeks after the food item is eaten. New testing methods can help people identify sensitivities and improve their health by, you know, really taking the guesswork out of which food items that patients might be sensitive to. So they can provide objective information, and we have actually tested one of these methods, the ALCAT test, in a clinical trial and demonstrated that when patients follow the guidance of the ALCAT test, these are patients with irritable bowel syndrome, that they actually have a significant improvement in their symptoms. For more information on what I've discussed today, you can go to PreviMedica.com.
At Cisco, we've come up with the first ever list of cybersecurity resolutions. We all make resolutions to be healthier, be happier. What Cisco's encouraging is that we make a resolution to be a little bit more secure. I'll give you three that you can consider. One, I resolve to protect my accounts. Longer passwords, stronger passwords. No one likes that. I know. So consider using a password manager. Most important, look for things like a multi-factor. So if an adversary does get in, we can click a button and we can stop them. I resolve to protect my toys and technology. I just got a new gift. Before I plug it in the internet, let me pull down the updates. And then what about our phones, our tablets, our devices? What about things we don't think about, like internet-enabled appliances, our home internet router? Make a habit of checking those regularly, just like we check the fire alarm for any updates. Finally, I resolve to protect my privacy.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline. And so we were talking about the World Economic Forum and their annual meeting. And here's a quote from Al Gore. Remember him? He says, "We're boiling the oceans. Oh, my God, Chicken Little." Yesterday, I was guest on somebody's program, and they said, "It sort of reminds me of Foghorn Leghorn." I said, "Yeah, with a little bit of Chicken Little and probably a lot more thrown in." Nobody better to talk about climate change, sort of like COVID. Whatever bandwagon they're on, you can usually bet it has something to do with taking more of your money, more of your freedom, and more of your life. Greg Wrightstone joins us, geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. He's got a best-selling book, which is aptly called Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know. Welcome once again, Gregory Wrightstone. Good to have you on the Alan Nathan program.
Great to be with you, Karen. And actually, if you go to Amazon right now, it's a number one bestseller in two categories. The book is just has been so popular.
And it's not a brand new book, right? When did you write it?
More than 5 years old.
How
but it's
about
as relevant
that?
To it's as relevant today as it was when it was written. And because maybe more so. Because as you know, I take a look at the big picture going back from what's happening now, thousands and millions of years, to put it in its proper perspective. So those things are timeless compared to and it's because we don't want to look at just the last 50 or 100 or 150 years. You have to look at the big perspective because these are long cycles. The warming and cooling cycles are on 1,000-year cycles. So just looking at 100 years doesn't tell you much. And you have to look back to find out that there were three other warming trends going back to the first great civilizations. And if you don't capture that, you think, well, this is unusual and unprecedented, when in fact it's actually quite normal and cyclical.
Yes. Well, let's bring it to the present. And it's interesting. We haven't heard much from Al Gore. And that's Rush Limbaugh's way of putting the two words together, Al Gore. And all of a sudden, somebody played for me his audio. And he really did sound like Foghorn Leghorn.
Unhinged.
Unhinged. We don't have the audio, but I encourage everybody to look it up, because it seems as if people who are being proven false and proven liars, what they do is they jump up and down louder and more dramatically to cover up the fact that whatever they've predicted hasn't come to pass. Could you remind everyone, if you know, what are some of the things Al Gore actually predicted, none of which came to pass?
Oh, when it came out, he predicted an ice-free Arctic by 2012. there would
right.
be that England was going to be partially underwater. That now he's talking about an Earth that would be destroyed within X number of years. His main thing he was talking about in this rant he just did was about boiling. The oceans are boiling. Well, the oceans have warmed about 0.8 of a degree since 1900, which is barely perceptible. Now, that doesn't sound too dramatic to me. They're not boiling. He also talked about there would be 1 billion climate refugees. 1 billion. And that reminded me
where are they going to go? Where is he saying
climate refugee?
So he's saying that there will be people in other places that become uninhabitable. And I mean, the more dramatic... The more he goes for it.
Yeah, he's referencing probably sea level rise, because that's the big thing. All these Pacific Island, Indian, the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean islands will be underwater within just another decade or two. And that we're and that they're refugees from them. In my book, I captured in 2005, the UN predicted 20 million climate refugees by the year 2010. Of course, that didn't happen. We couldn't find one.
Nobody ever gets held accountable for these lies. That's what is so frustrating. Nobody ever holds them accountable.
I looked at the census for 25 and the census for 2010 for the five most at-risk islands. And each one of those island nations gained population significant. Wow. So we had people flocking to these islands. They weren't fleeing the islands. They were
including politicians who buy homes on Martha's Vineyard. Right? Sorry, I just had to throw that in.
And then in 2015, the UN again predicted 20 million refugees, climate refugees, by the year 2020. Well, of course, that came and went, and yet they can't point to one. And it's just crazy. And here's the really interesting point that I need to get. The most at-risk island that they point to are the Maldives in the Indian Ocean. The highest point on the island is only 15 feet above sea level. Well, that sounds pretty bad, except if you look back as a geologist, 20,000 years ago, those same islands were, again, just above sea level. And since that time, sea level has risen 400 feet. But yet here we are. Those islands rose, and it's called it's a geologic process known as accretion. And these islands grow along with rising sea level. And so what they're saying is, sea level rose 400 feet, but that next 8 inches, which is what we're expecting between now and 2100, 8 inches, that's barely above your ankles.
Yeah. You know what bothers me, what worries me most, and they're the greatest targets on all of this stuff, are kids who live in terror and fear of the weather. You know, you've got this constant propaganda, fear-mongering, not unlike what we even now are seeing with COVID, whatever the government wants to use as a tool to rob people of their life and liberty and to advance this agenda gets all rolled up into fear-mongering and fear. And kids don't have the wherewithal and certainly not the facts. It's always this invisible fear, you know, that you better do as we say or you're going to die. Do you go out and talk to kids? How do you reach out? It's not just kids, but kids are often targeted. That's why they used that bizarre little girl, Greta, to talk to kids to be even more terrified and more arrogant and to tell on their parents if they drive a car.
Well, we're doing something to solve that problem. I'm the executive director of the CO2 Coalition, and a year ago, some of our members recognized that science education was a huge problem in America, and we set out to do something about it. We formed an education committee. We're about ready to roll out our educational initiative in a new website. It's the CO2 Learning Center.
Great, and just in time. Go ahead, tell us how they can find it.
Well, it's not active yet, but you can go to co2coalition.org. CO2coalition.org.
Very good. Gregory Wrightstone, always a pleasure to talk to you here on the Alan Nathan Show or anywhere I happen to talk to you. We're going to talk a lot more about female violence. What's going on there? Karen Cataline filling in for Alan Nathan here on the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned.
For parents looking for a fun new read to enjoy with their children, a hilarious picture book called Got Your Nose is now available in stores from New York Times bestselling author Alan Katz and Unicorns Are the Worst creator Alex Willen. The book imagines what happens when a good-natured game of Got Your Nose goes too far. Becky loves when Grandpa Max comes to visit, but this time when he pulls his favorite prank on Becky, he accidentally takes her nose for real. Now Becky and Grandpa Max have to chase Becky's nose as it scurries throughout town, or else who knows what will happen. Acclaimed children's book author Alan Katz, also a 6-time Emmy-nominated writer for many children's TV series, tells us more.
This is a sweet, funny, and fast-paced story with vibrant, colorful illustrations that I hope will leave kids smiling and help adults realize that you're never too old for silly fun.
Got Your Nose is now available wherever books are sold.
Real estate experts are predicting as much as a 15% drop in housing prices over the next year. But with interest rates continuing to rise, home buyers still need all the help they can get. Natalie Torres-Haddad, author and host of Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, says there are programs available to help.
Chase Home Lending has news about its $5,000 home buyer grant program. The grant launched in majority Black communities and has now expanded to include Hispanic and Latino communities in 20 markets across the country. That's more than 10,000 grant eligible communities. The grant can be applied toward two of the biggest barriers to home ownership: the upfront cash needed for a down payment and closing costs. This homebuyer grant is just one part of Chase's long-term commitment toward uplifting and empowering Black, Hispanic, and Latino neighborhoods.
To learn more about Chase's $5,000 Home Buyers Grant Program, check out chase.com/affordable or visit a Chase branch to speak with a home lending advisor.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries, from healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. Karen Cataline filling in for Alan today. I always love doing that. So, apropos of some of the issues we've been covering today, have you noticed that things are upside down and the people you usually depend or you think are going to perpetrate are going to put out logical, rational, and, you know, law-abiding issues somehow tend to twist things upside down and backwards? You should be suspicious. Why not? you're allowed. Well, here to talk about one of them, which is female perpetrated violence on the rise. All violence is on the rise, but a lot of it is coming from women. Do you think the mainstream media is talking about that? I don't call them mainstream anymore. I just call them the propaganda media. Founder of SAVE, he's a former faculty member of three universities, former federal regulator at the Department of Health and Human Services, and he also offered over 100 peer-reviewed articles and editorials. Dr. Edward Bartlett, founder of SAVE, joins us right here, right now, on the Alan Nathan Show.
Hi, Carolyn. That was a very nice introduction. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Dr. Bartlett, so it used to be that men were always accused of all the violence, and of course, women were fed this crazy line that if only women ruled the world would be a safer, more peaceful place. Now we've got female perpetrated violence on the rise. What's going on there? Why don't you enlighten us as to what you think is going on?
Yeah, well, just so we're clear about the facts here. So Centers for Disease Control, which are the experts on this issue, they recently reported that there's actually more male victims of domestic violence each year than female victims. So this is not just sort of a factoid from nowhere. This is based on the Centers for Disease Control. But it relates to this.
Well, a lot of us don't trust the CDC anymore. I'm surprised that they reported that, to tell you the truth. But go right ahead. Sorry.
Well, I understand your skepticism. In this particular survey, though, it's called the NISVS. It actually is quite a good survey. They've been doing it for over 10 years. So I tend to trust the numbers.
Looks like we lost Dr. Edward Bartlett, and I'm just going to let you know of a couple of headlines while we get him back. We've got Toronto, 8 teenage girls charged with deadly stabbing. 8 teenage girls in Canada charged with deadly stabbing. That didn't used to be a commonality. How about this? There's a video. Nevada high school girl relentlessly punches a female classmate. And you can watch that video. Further, a wild brawl erupted in a classroom this morning as students were about to take their final exams at Nathan Hale High School in West Allis. I just was reading a couple of the headlines. Dr. Edward Bartlett is back with us now. So there are headlines all over, from Toronto to Nevada High School and further places. Go ahead. You were about to say when we lost you.
Yeah. Well, this ties into the broader theme of what people use the term patriarchy and matriarchy. And, you know, when you come down to it, feminists blame all domestic violence on the patriarchy. Okay, and this is really not a made-up comment. This truly is what they believe. So when you say, oh, well, the reputable sources, and it's not just the CDC, there literally have been hundreds of studies showing that women are perpetrators at least as often as men. Feminists just dismiss it and say, that's just patriarchy. But then you say, oh, but were you aware that in lesbian, same-sex female relationships, the rate of domestic violence is even higher than than heterosexual? And honestly, that just drives them crazy because, of course, you know, in a lesbian, same-sex relationship, there is nobody exercising patriarchal power and control. But again, that's the ideology.
They can find a way to blame it on whatever they want to blame it on. But so what, you know, you're a doctor. I mean, you're you're not a physician. You're a PhD, correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. So to what do you attribute this, if you know? Enlighten us as to what's going on. Why now? Why this? It wasn't always that way, was it?
Well, honestly, there have been studies going back literally 40 years that have found that the the rate of domestic violence is very similar between the sexes. So what's going on here? Well, it's really no secret at all that feminism is based on Marxist ideology, right?
And, I don't know that is a secret, but I think a lot of people are figuring that out now. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, I think it's pretty obvious to anybody that's looked into this. So under Marxist ideology, the family is oppressive to women. Now, of course, all the studies show the exact opposite. Women live longer, they're healthier, they have more income, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know,
yes.
the families are oppressive to women. And one of the ways that families are oppressive to women is, oh, all the domestic violence. Again, we're ignoring the fact that if you look at domestic violence outside of the nuclear family, again, it's much higher than in the stable family structure.
Huh. Well, and we already know that Black Lives Matter admitted, one of the heads of Black Lives Matter admitted that their goal was to destroy what? The nuclear family. Now, and they also admitted that they were trained Marxists. So people are beginning to figure out that the nuclear family being under attack and Marxism have a strong connection to one another, don't they?
A very strong connection. It is not coincidental because, again, Karl Marx himself said that women were oppressed by the nuclear family, and feminists take those words at value. So they're trying to replace the government instead of the family as the basic unit of society.
Without a doubt. The welfare state, the same thing. The Julia video about taking care, quote unquote, not taking care of, but depending on the government from cradle to grave, is really all about what? Marrying the government. And the government can be among the most cruel, most abusive of partners, but we're not there yet. It's only after you marry them do you find out that it's an abusive partner, right?
Well, and I remember that video, the Julia video, and you're exactly right. It is, you know, cradle to grave care by the government, which is, you know, I mean, you look at every Marxist society, you know, Russia, China, elsewhere, they've been absolute nightmares. There have been human rights nightmares. There have been economic nightmares.
Yes.
They're total disaster. And I mean, truly, that's what the feminist ideology is pushing for, you know, right now.
Wouldn't you call them, though, I hate to call them that. I'm a woman, I can do it. Actually, I can do it because I'm expressing an opinion. Sometimes you got to justify that. Okay, this is an opinion, but they're acting like useful idiots, aren't they? I mean, you know, and the whole concept of a useful idiot is you buy into an ideology that really comes back to destroy you, but by then, sadly, horribly, tragically, it's too late.
Yeah, I think you're actually being very kind and maybe too kind to use the term.
Rare.
Idiot.
I
would call it a mental condition, but I maybe we're quibbling over words here. But I mean, we're talking about a serious threat to the nuclear family, and it's happening right now.
Hmm. Do you have any, in our last, let's see, we got like a minute. You got anything to end on a positive note, an encouraging note on what we can do about this, the violence, the female violence, and the attack on the nuclear family? What can we do?
Well, I do have a positive message, is that all of this is driven by the narrative, of course, the narrative of oppressive families, the narrative of violent males. That's all the narrative. But you may recall the Amber Heard trial that took place a few months ago.
Yes,
That trial has absolutely shattered the narrative, not just in the United States, but around the world.
I'm glad you mentioned that. At first, I didn't take it seriously, but boy, oh boy, you're exactly right. Dr. Edward Bartlett, founder of SAVE, you can find him online at, just look up save. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us, Doctor. We appreciate it. Well, we're going to wrap up this wonderful 2 hours with a little cap, if you will, from someone who will comment on Davos and the end of Davos. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This report is sponsored by Coca-Cola. Start your new year with real Coke taste and zero sugar. Coke Zero Sugar is now available at participating Burger King restaurants. Coke Zero Sugar will fuel your new year with that great Coke taste. Satisfy your hunger and enjoy Coke Zero Sugar with a piping hot breakfast sandwich, like a sausage, egg, and cheese croissant sandwich. Its sizzling sausage, fluffy egg, and melted American cheese on a toasted croissant makes for a delicious breakfast to start your morning right. And don't forget the crispy hash browns. Or if the flame-grilled Whopper sandwich, BK Royal crispy chicken sandwich, or chicken fries are your fave, you are in luck because all Burger King menu items pair perfectly with an ice-cold Coke Zero Sugar. It's the perfect no-sugar sparkling beverage that goes great with everything. Coke Zero Sugar is a great way to start 2023. And since you rule, you can enjoy it all year, too, at participating U.S. Burger King restaurants.
Hi there, it's Joe Montana. Life after football has been full of taking my shot at new things. Now I'm working with Pfizer to tell you about pneumococcal pneumonia. Pneumococcal pneumonia should be the last thing standing in your way.
Pneumococcal pneumonia is a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can strike any time of year. It can disrupt your life for weeks, and in severe cases, it can put you in the hospital and even be life-threatening. And Joe knows that vaccination is one of the best ways to help protect himself from pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 65 or older or 19 or older with certain underlying medical conditions like asthma, COPD, chronic heart disease, or diabetes, talk to your doctor or pharmacist about the risk of pneumococcal pneumonia and whether vaccination is right for you. Understand your risk at knowpneumonia.com. That's KNOW pneumonia.com. This is your shot.
This message is brought to you by Pfizer.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone, for Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner. Or a 14-year-old girl who signs up to every after-school activity not to make friends, but just to get something to eat. Or a retiree who fell ill and had to choose
between getting medicine or groceries.
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, No other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. We have reached our final segment for this episode of the Alan Nathan Show here on the Main Street Radio Network. And we've been talking on and off about Davos. Now, right before the break, I said the end of Davos. No, I didn't mean that. Davos is the annual meeting that is wrapping up in Davos, Switzerland. And finally, information about that meeting and what these self-appointed dictators that nobody elected have in mind to tell the rest of us how to live and what to do. Here to talk about is someone who wrote an article about that in the New American, executive senior editor at the New American magazine, also longtime contributor to that magazine, writing on economics, foreign affairs, American politics, and other subjects, is Steve Bonta. We are so happy to have him. Steve, thank you for joining us here on the last segment of the Alan Nathan Show.
Happy to be here.
Well, thank you. So this meeting is wrapping up, and I read your article that came out January 16th about it in the New American, and it sounds as if these maniacal Dr. Evils, especially, I'm just going to say it like I call it, like I see it, aren't exactly encouraged or happy. Shouldn't that be good news for the rest of us? Why don't we end our show on things that they're unhappy about? Not they're unhappy because of climate change, like Al Gore, but unhappy that their agenda might be hitting a few snags. Is that true? And can we have a little titter of happiness or encouragement there?
Sure. Well, let's see. So Al Gore, probably the most interesting thing that happened all week at this year's Davos conclave was Al Gore's impassioned diatribe about the climate, in which he admitted that everything is not going the way he and his fellow globocrats would like regarding climate change. And some of the things he was very happy that that Bolsonaro was ousted by Lula down in Brazil, you know, a victory for the Marxists there. And he went on in that vein for a while, but he was very unhappy that the big oil and the energy companies aren't just rolling over and saying, you're right, you know, we should shut down operations and cease human progress. They continue to produce their products apace, and human progress continues, which is obviously very upsetting to the likes of Mr. Gore. So that's one thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But I was just going to say, so the whole climate thing, I mean, what my colleagues covered the COP27 climate conference in Egypt just a couple months ago. And, that has become the central agenda item of the globalists. In fact, a number of them have gone on record saying that they think that if there's one issue that they can use to really bring about a true, you know, a fully crystallized new world order, meaning world government, socialist world government under the UN system or something like it, it's the climate change and the environmental issue writ large. So they really have emphasized that. And you know, they did the same at Davos just now. Now, Davos, I mean, you know, despite Klaus Schwab's, you know, I think the guy's total lack of self-awareness, doesn't realize just how much he looks like a Dr. Evil-esque villain.
Dr. Evil.
Absolutely.
And,
or
and the
like
agenda
that,
you know, is such, too, the hubris, the arrogance, the who is this guy and why is he the boss of us? Why?
Well, what this has evolved into over the last 53 years, you know, the Global Economic Forum, because of its timing, you know, in non-pandemic times, it generally is the first big global confab each year. And so it becomes sort of the agenda setting organization. And all of the good, globalists and their epigones now will fan out. I think they've actually ended the conference last night. And so now they're going to fan out and go back to their respective
you know, spheres of influence in academia and by legislatures and, of course, the UN system as a whole. And the rest of the year will be about implementing much of the agenda that's been agreed upon at Davos. Right now, they're also upset. And this is not this is kind of hard to cast in a really positive way. You know, the tragic war in Ukraine is also something that's upsetting them because, you know, not so much because perhaps they're solicitous over the fate of the poor Ukrainians and indeed the Russians who are dying in this war, this tragic, senseless war, but because it threatens to torpedo, you know, the whole NATO European Union based model of regional governance that's such a critical piece of the overall, you know, kind of New World Order plan that they've had going. Because, I mean, until the Russian invasion of the Ukraine, Europe was sort of the model for how we're going to move forward and assemble the pieces of a global order, you know, starting with regional governments and regional military, you know, peacekeeping alliances like NATO. And then all of a sudden along comes Putin and Russia and really just literally torpedoes the whole deal. And so that's a major concern. Yeah.
Well, isn't that doesn't that make a great case for the fact that Putin, for whatever his ills, and certainly he has them, wasn't going along with that stupid red button that Hillary Clinton handed him on the Great Reset, that everyone was going, what? What is she doing? She's handing him a plastic red button that he's supposed to push? And I don't think that, you know, a dictator like that really wants to be dictated to by other dictators. So he seems to be putting a wrench in their plans. Or am I wrong?
Well, you know, a late great colleague of mine, Will Grigg, always used to say the devil always gets to play the best tunes. And, you know, you could also say, I mean, to some extent, that's also true of communist China. I mean, the chief sin of their dictator Xi Jinping is not that, you know, not, I mean, they make a big thing over the whole Uyghur business, but I mean, as genocides go, I have to say that's a fairly tame example.
Oh, good. But, now we're rating genocides. All right.
That's okay. Right. That's, no, and yeah. Well, and as someone who has lived in communist China, I can tell you firsthand what it's like over there. But the main problem that people have with China is not the oppression. It's the fact that right now Xi Jinping is acting like he's no longer beholden to the global authorities. He's kind of off the reservation. All this stuff. And the same was true of Putin, you know.
Let me slip this in because we only have like a minute. I keep hearing now all of a sudden that Dr. Evil, Klaus Schwab, and the whole World Economic Forum is actually a puppet to communist China. Do you believe that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to know. These people, you know, this is so intricate and so shadowy. It's hard to know who's a puppet to whom. But I will tell you this, you know, the traditional Western-based New World Orderites have no intention of allowing their pet project to be presided over by the Chinese. You know, I mean, they because they, you know, they and if you think about it, I mean, really, you know, the socialism and communism originated in Europe and were exported to the likes of China.
Yeah.
So. I tend
we
to see it more
run.
As a Western-based movement. Yep.
I would love to talk to you more. I got to say, it's like Henry Kissinger said, and he was is a globalist. It's a pity they all couldn't lose. Steve Bonta, executive director, a senior editor of The New American. Well, that does it for this edition of The Alan Nathan Show. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow for The Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.